Let me see what you can do.
Hot topics and interviews.
And that's just how we do it.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
It's the Entertainment Man Podcast.
Entertainment Man Podcast is brought to you by Crispy on the Web. Go to crispyontheweb.com for more information, social media, and much, much more.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Crispy Man, and welcome to the podcast. Welcome to another interview podcast. It is good to be back again. And today I have David Hirsch of the podcast. How's it going, David?
Excellent. Great to be with you, Chris. Thanks for the opportunity.
No problem. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a Chicago area native. I've been married for almost 41 years. My wife and I have five adult children. They're ages 27 to 34. We have two grandchildren who are five and soon to be two. And I work as a financial advisor. This is my 40th year in the business. And outside of that, I'm an outspoken advocate for all things to do with father involvement.
Okay. Can you talk about the Special Fathers Network? What is it and what is your involvement?
Well, thanks for asking. So to put that question into context, I'll just say that when I became a father for the fifth time 27 years ago, I didn't realize that there were so many children growing up in father absent homes. The estimate is 4 out of every 10. That works out to be somewhere north of 20 million U.S. kids growing up without their dads. And I thought, oh my gosh, am I the last person to learn about this? And as I talked to my friends and asked them, they said, no, I had no idea about the consequence of what we generically refer to as the breakdown of the family. So that started me on a journey that I would not have predicted. I helped start the Illinois Fatherhood Initiative, which is a statewide not-for-profit, one of the first, if not the first, in the country, whose mission is to actively engage fathers in the education of their children. And I won't go into much detail about that, but to mention one of the programs that was started back in 1997, which has engaged more than 425,000 school-age children around Illinois who write essays about their father, stepfather, grandfather, and father figure. So we put on a bunch of celebrations to draw awareness of the important role that men play in their children's lives. And then about 7 years ago, I started the 21st Century Dads Foundation, whose signature program is the Special Fathers Network, a dad-to-dad mentoring program for fathers raising children with special needs. And the simple notion was that we are going to match the more seasoned dads, the guys with, say, 10 or more years of experience, with the newer dads, the guys who are just recently learning about their child's diagnosis, either from the time of birth or, like with autism, you know, maybe a couple years down the road. So that's the short story.
All right. And I'm a big advocate for people with autism. I'm on the spectrum myself. I know on our pre-call, we talked about that I'm on the spectrum. Persuasive development disorder is actually what I have. Exactly is my diagnosis. And then also anxiety, as I just got diagnosed with that as well. But no, it's good to have awareness. Those who are with a disability, autism, it's a very important, you know, to make people aware that there is a disability, there is autism out there. So
absolutely. And the statistics seem to be getting more prevalent. Mm-hmm. Like a decade ago, it might have been like 1 out of 500 or something. And then 5 years ago, it was 1 out of 100. And today, I don't know what the number is exactly, but it's like 1 out of 40 or something like that births in the United States will lead to an autism diagnosis, which is just crazy when you think about that.
It is. Oh, definitely is. And it's pretty well common up here in Canada too. Like we have our special Olympics here that helps, that, you know, people on disability can play sports as well. So that's really good. We have all our tools, and there is a lot of tools, not just up here in Canada, but also, you know, there's services down in the States, I'm sure, as well. Like people are getting more support now with autism than they used to when it first started. So I was diagnosed, I think it was at 8 or 9, I was, so something like that.
Yeah, well, what I've learned in the advocacy work that I've been doing for individuals with a disability or special needs is that the sooner a diagnosis can be made, the better, so that more resources, therapies can be brought to bear. And, you know, part of it is parent or parents' willingness to, you know, accept the diagnosis. right? There's a certain level of denial that takes place. You know, oh, you know, little Johnny or Susie is just a little bit of a late bloomer, or, you know, these things will pass, right? You know, they're so young. And, you know, that's natural. And I think that what I've learned, if parents are looking to err in one direction or the next, it would be to err on the side of saying, okay, maybe there is something here. And I want to err on the side of accepting that and doing whatever I can to bring the right resources to bear. So it doesn't always work out. But I think in more cases than not, if parents can just tap into the resources, and, you know, part of it, and I don't want to get too technical, is that if you do have an autism diagnosis, as an example, you know, you're entitled to certain services, right? And there's certain reimbursements that take place from a healthcare perspective that you don't get the financial benefits unless there is a formal diagnosis. So unless you've got more money than you know what to do with, or you're independently wealthy and that doesn't make a difference, you know, it would behoove you, right, just from a financial perspective, to make sure that these resources are brought to bear for the benefit of your child. And all parents want the same thing for the most part, just to make their child, make sure that their child reaches their full God-given potential. And, you know, if they need some help, you know, beyond what mom and dad can do, beyond what a traditional classroom and a school can do, then let's move forward. Let's try to figure that out.
Agreed. And up here, we have special programs like the multiple exceptions class. We have the behavior intervention class, but that's what I was in through, I don't know, what was it, grade 6? In grade 7 and on, right to when I was in, right to the end of high school, and then they had a special program for me during at the college too, so that's really good. What are the goals for the Special Fathers Network?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I had mentioned that when we first came up with the idea, it was just simply a mentoring program. We're just going to recruit as many qualified dads, seasoned dads, like I said, with 10 or more years of experience. And the good news is we've recruited north of 700 dads, mostly from North America. That's, you know, the U.S., Canada, but now, you know, in maybe 12 different countries. And we haven't covered all the diagnoses, but they do include autism, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, rare disease, blind, deaf, missing or limb or limbs, and, you know, a lot of one-off things, some things that are never diagnosed, right? Mm-hmm. You know, not every child's situation is diagnosable. But regardless of the diagnosis, many of the therapies and the resources are similar. And I think that we had this notion of trying to bring the more seasoned dad alongside the less experienced dad to answer questions, not from a healthcare standpoint, not from a legal standpoint. That's what doctors and lawyers are for, but just from a practical standpoint. You know, one dad to the next, somebody who's been there and done that. I know for a fact that it's a very, very valuable resource for parents, moms and dads. And let me just speak to that. You know, we're talking primarily about dads, the Special Fathers Network. The whole program, the advocacy I've been doing in the last 27 years, stems from the fact that my mom was a single mom. She raised me and my younger brother from my age 6 as a Chicago public school teacher. And I only mention that because it's a fact. I'm not looking for sympathy or pity. She was just the salt of the earth person, didn't have a lot of money, had a big heart, would do anything for me and my brother who has special needs. And, you know, it shouldn't be that way. Most of the women that I've met in my life, thousands and thousands of women, single moms, didn't sign up to be single moms, right? That was the furthest thing from mind when they became a mother, right? But that's the circumstance they find themselves in. So the advocacy that we're doing for dads has a lot to do with the fact that when dad's involved, whether mom and dad are married or not, when dad's involved, it takes some of the burden, the pressure off of mom, who's, you know, doing most of everything. So while we're trying to attract dads, the whole purpose behind this is to make sure that moms are not as overwhelmed or burdened as they would be otherwise. So let's make sure that this is a gender neutral conversation, and that while we're trying to get dads involved, it has a lot to do with what's in the best interest of the child, what benefits both mom and dad, right? And let's have a better balance in the time commitment that both parents are making for the well-being of their children. So anyway, the matching does get done, but we haven't gotten in front of as many younger dads, the dads with the children, say, that are 0 to 3, right? The early intervention age dads, early intervention age children. And so what we've done is we've pivoted a little bit and we've said, okay, we're just going to create content and resources for dads, right? Because maybe they're not ready to be mentored, right?
Right.
You know, you can't force a mentor on a mentee. The mentee has to have the right frame of mind to want to have a more seasoned she's in person, come alongside. So somebody said to me, and you could probably appreciate this, Chris, as a podcast host, somebody said to me like 7 years ago, hey, Hirsch, what do you think about podcasts? That was the question. That's what I heard the question to be, at least. And I said, oh, I like podcasts. I've started listening to them. Some are entertaining. Some are informative. You know, some are, you know, very inspiring, right? And they said, no, not what do you think about listening to podcasts? What do you think about hosting a podcast? And I said, well, that's pretty ridiculous. You know, I'm a financial advisor. My brain is wired to be a numbers sticky brain, right? You know, you want to know something about finance, accounting, investments. You know, I'm your guy. I'm not bragging when I say that. I've just been doing this for a long time. I found a niche, right, that I can help a lot of people. Most of our clients are high net worth, alternate high net worth investors. But the idea of hosting like a radio program, like a podcast, editing, producing, zero talent, right? Zero experience. Well, you would be good at it. And if you can't do the editing and the producing yourself, maybe you could hire somebody to do that. So anyway, one thing led to the next. I reached out to a handful of dads that I've known for, I don't know, 5, 10 plus years, who are raising children with special needs. And I asked them if they would allow me to interview them, right? Just ask them a bunch of, I don't want to say softball questions, but, you know, just thoughtful questions, you know, about their situation, about how they've overcome some of the challenges. And then one episode led to the next, you know, 5, 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 episodes. And we're coming up on episode number 300 here in April. It's like, oh my gosh, I would have never guessed in 100 years that I would have been a podcast host. It is so much fun. It's challenging. Like, you know, you do need to put a lot of advance time and preparation into each interview, right? Just to make sure that you understand who your interviewee is. I always, 100%, always do a pre-interview or a couple conversations beforehand, much like you do, Chris. Just make sure you get acquainted with, you know, your subject matter, and you've got a sense for what the story is, so you can ask, like you have, more thoughtful questions, right? So that conversation's a little bit more comprehensive. So we've covered a lot of ground on the, you know, various diagnoses that I made reference to earlier. And I've probably done, I don't know, 75 to 80 interviews out of the 300 on autism. Many of them are the parents, the moms, and the dads who are raising kiddos with special needs or with autism. And in some cases, like yourself, right, I've had the opportunity to interview adults who are autistic, right? Who are, in many cases, like you, a self-advocate, right? Somebody who can speak to having autism and what that means, right? And some of the challenges, not from a clinical or medical perspective, but you're talking from your own personal lived experience, right? I interviewed a Canadian dad, Jonathan Bennett. His episode's going to appear this month. And the point he made raising a child with autism is that the most valuable resource for him, and I think that we're going to learn more and more about this, has little to do coming from the medical community, but those who have autism, like yourself. He said he learned more from individuals that were 5 and 10 years older than his child about what it's like to be autistic and how do you make sure that your child is understood and getting the resources that they need. So anyway, I'll get off my little soapbox, but
it's okay.
A little bit Special Fathers Network.
Let's go right into talking about your podcast. So we've talked about what it's about, obviously. How long have you been doing the podcast?
It started at the end of 2017. We weren't so focused on what I have learned, which is that if you're a podcast host, you need to be consistent, right? If you're going to be a daily podcast, make sure you produce daily. If it's a couple times a week, make sure you're, you know, following that schedule. And about 3 or 4 years ago, we were committed to being a weekly podcast. And you know, you have to hold your feet to the fire, right? Because not everybody you reach out to, you know, follows through. And I know through COVID, it was a little bit more challenging, right? Because we weren't able to meet with people as easily. But the beauty or the benefit of that was we all got used to, not just podcast hosts, we all got used to doing things remotely on Zoom, on Skype, and other platforms like that. And so now it's almost easier, right? To be reaching out to people there in Canada, in the United States, or around the world and scheduling interviews. And I would say that the thing that I enjoy most about the podcast is taking a deep dive with each of the interviewees. Now, most of the people that I've interviewed for the Special Fathers Network Dad-to-Dad podcast are dads, stepdads, granddads, and father figures. 80, maybe 85% of the interviews are from the dad's perspective. But I've also interviewed dozens of moms and other women who are PTs and OTs and, you know, have something valuable to add. I've interviewed healthcare practitioners and just interesting individuals who, in most cases, is have a connection. Maybe they're a sibling to somebody who has a disability or an uncle, right? So I feel like our listeners have enjoyed the wide variety of interviews that we've done. And the podcast has been reasonably successful, but we found that our listeners wanted to take a deeper dive. So if you have a child with autism, right, you know, it's nice that you're hearing all these other interviews, because like I said, there's many similarities from raising a child with autism and Down syndrome and cerebral palsy and rare disease. Many of the therapies are similar, and some of the challenges that parents are going through, feeling alone, feeling isolated, you know, maybe not having all the answers, getting conflicting information. It's a very similar experience. But what we decided to do was to repurpose some of our content, the podcast interviews, in the form of audiobooks. And to date, we've created 5 audiobooks. The very first was on autism, and then on Down syndrome, and then on rare disease, and then cerebral palsy. And then, this is a little bit sobering, but the most recent audiobook that we put out at the end of 2023 was on losing a child. So many of the families who are raising kiddos with special needs are dealing with medically fragile children, and they don't all live a typical life, length of life. And probably done 2, maybe 3 dozen interviews with families where the child has not lived, like a stillbirth, died shortly after birth, died as, you know, a toddler, died as a young adult for that matter. And I think it's really important to be open and authentic. And that's what these interviews are. They're just regular people for the most part, not a lot of high profile people, although we do have some high profile interviews. And, you know, I think what our listeners can identify with is that these are ordinary people who in many cases are doing some extraordinary things, right, as far as the commitment that they have to their children. And I would just summarize that by saying, having interviewed almost 300 people now, that most of the parents that I've met in the world of disability or special needs are, on average, more humble, less arrogant, and less selfish. And, you know, at the end of the day, as you get to be a little bit older and you need to be a little bit more selective about how you spend your time and who you're spending your time with, I would argue that we all want to spend time with people that are more humble, less arrogant, and less selfish. And it's just an amazing community. And many of our dads have said, and almost verbatim, I would not have asked for a child with special needs, but knowing everything I know now, a decade or decades down the road, I wouldn't change anything. It's my hope or aspiration that all parents would be able to say that and mean that, that maybe they wouldn't have asked for a child with special needs. But, you know, what you realize down the road is that, hey, it's helped define who we are as a family. Mm-hmm. It's helped us clarify what's important, what our values are. And you don't get caught up in the material world as much, right? You can celebrate the small victories. And I think that, you know, life's challenging enough, right? We don't need to make it more challenging. So.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Life, especially recently with all the COVID and the pandemic, like that was a challenging enough for me being on the spectrum too, right? Because, you know, like I can't go out, I can't see friends, I can't have Larry here to record podcasts. And, you know, we literally had to go on Skype, and that was like a challenge and a half because Skype was not working whatsoever. Like, we were having technical issues, and, you know, we had to navigate through all the issues through what we were going through, right? Like, we had to, like, figure it out, and, like, it was a big change. We had to go through the different change of from him being here physically in the room with me to online, and now we're going to be going back to that because he's moving north next year. So, but, you know, isn't technology great, though? Because you can connect like that with someone online like we are today, right?
I love it. Yeah. I wouldn't trade things. At first, it was difficult to pivot or make the adjustments like you were saying. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like a lot of things in life. I think the pandemic, for not everybody, because it's been a real tragedy for many families, mm-hmm. but looking at it from a workplace standpoint, a productivity standpoint, it's really accelerated the adoption of technology, I don't know, by maybe 5 or 10 years, mm-hmm. right? The technology was there to do all these virtual meetings and do the things that we're talking about doing. But most of us weren't familiar with it, right?
Right.
You know, but the adoption of the use of the technology is accelerated because we were forced to, right? Mm-hmm. We needed to. And you know, we went from doing conferences with dads face-to-face, like 2-3 dozen dads at a time, to having to pivot back in May of 2020, right? A couple months into the pandemic. So we went from planning an 80-person in-person conference at a local church mm-hmm. in the northwest suburbs of Chicago to pivoting to do an online virtual conference. And we thought, oh, geez, this is going to be a disaster, right? Because one of the huge benefits is these breakout sessions and getting together and sitting like around the table, 6-8 dads at a time, just the conversations you're having, right? To get to know one another and to develop an understanding of what one another's situations are. And we were pleasantly surprised that more than 200 dads from like 30-something states, Canada, the U.S., 5 or 6 other countries signed up to attend the virtual conference in May of 2020. And we've done a virtual conference every year, and we're still going to do one this year in May, just because, you know, it's a great way, like you were saying, to reach a lot of people very cost effectively. There's no transportation involved, right? You just have to like click, show up, right? You're there. So, you know, there's very few excuses for somebody who, you know, is interested, right, in connecting to other dads in this situation, tapping into the resources that are available. And I'm hoping that we're helping meet that unmet need that we have started out to as well.
All right. The cat got the tongue that tangles. Where can my listeners listen to your podcast?
Well, it's on all the major podcast platforms. And if they were to search SFN, which is the acronym for Special Fathers Network, Dad to Dad Podcast. And if that doesn't take you right to the podcast, you could type in my name, David Hirsch. The last name is spelled H-I-R-S-C-H. And if all else fails, you can go to the 21stCenturyDads.org website, because all the podcasts are naturally listed there, and you could filter there. You can filter for, you know, whatever you're looking for: autism, Down syndrome, rare disease, cerebral palsy, you know, blind, deaf, missing, or limbs. It's a very robust resource. The website is a very robust resource.
All right. I want to kind of bounce back up to the top of my list, because I jumped from like the top to the bottom, and then I'm jumping back to the middle. Can you talk about your TED Talk entitled "We Need to Break the Cycle of Father Absence"? What was the experience like?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. So this is circa October 2015, and about 4 months before that, I had done a bicycle ride, not a motorcycle ride, from Santa Monica, California to Chicago, Illinois. For some of your listeners, they may know that as the old Route 66, the mother road in the U.S. And I should mention that prior to doing that, I would not have considered myself an endurance cyclist. In fact, I did not own a bicycle that you could ride long distance. So I bought a bike, took delivery of it at the beginning of April, trained as much as my schedule would allow. Remember, I'm working full time. We have a large family. And I trained for 2 months, put a schedule together, put a crew together, flew out to LA, started pedaling back from Santa Monica to Chicago. And then 21 days later, on Father's Day, arriving at U.S. Cellular Field, which is where the Chicago White Sox play, to a crowd of about 40,000 people. And I was then 54 years old, and the total ride was 2,325 miles, to be exact.
Wow.
If you do the math, divide that by 21 days, it's about 112 miles a day, which coincidentally is the Ironman distance bicycle ride, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not one time, but 21 times in a row. So anyway, I mention this because I had been advocating for father involvement for, I don't know, 15 years up until that point in time. And what I realized is that I was able to use my voice. And it's not like I had been stoic or not talking about things, but I did a lot of media from coast to coast, TV, radio, print media. And along the way, I got stronger and stronger. In fact, most people were concerned that I would lose weight because you're burning 8, 10, 12,000 calories a day. I actually gained 6 pounds. My legs, Chris, were like Olympic skater type of legs, right? They were just so strong. And I wasn't worn out at all when I finished the ride. Anyway, I mentioned that as a backdrop because around that same time, somebody said, oh, what do you think about doing a TEDx talk in our local library? And I'm like, oh, I'm not really your guy. I don't really have that much to talk about. They said, no, you would be a good presenter. So anyway, I talked a little bit about the ride and about the advocacy that we're talking about here. And that led to actually writing a book by a similar title, 21st Century Dads, A Father's Journey to Break the Cycle of Father Absence. And one of the things that I realized that I had not really talked about, and I want to be respectful, is the dysfunctional relationship I had with my dad. I mentioned mentioned earlier that my mom raised me and my younger brother from my age six as a Chicago public school teacher. And whenever anybody would ask me for decades about parenting, I'd always talk about my mom. I'd say, oh, what about your dad? I said, well, my primary father figure growing up was my maternal grandfather, Sam Solomon, my mom's dad. And he was there from the time I was born until the time he died. And fortunately, I got to know him really well and over a long period of time because he lived to age 93.
Wow.
He died when I was 40 back in April of 2001. And I was the oldest of the three grandchildren. And coincidentally, I was born on his birthday. My mom had a C-section. I'm pretty sure she arranged it so that I would be born on his birthday. Not the day before, not the day after, but on his birthday. Anyway, that led to this bonding experience with my grandfather, right? We always celebrated our birthdays together, and I wanted to be more like my grandfather. But what I wasn't talking about for decades and decades was my relationship with my dad. It did not bring up good memories. I'm not proud of this. I was not close to my father. We reconciled as adults. I would invite him over for our kids' birthdays and holidays. We were very civil, but there wasn't a loving relationship. Mm-hmm. I didn't look up to my dad. And again, I'm not proud of that. But one of the things that I realized during those interviews along the Route 66, giving the TEDx talk, writing that book, was that I started to talk about my relationship with my dad, again, in a respectful way, and opening up a little bit, talking about something that I was rather uncomfortable talking about. And what I realized is that it increased a level of authenticity, right? Mm-hmm. I wasn't just saying that I'm a fatherhood advocate because of all the statistics, right? I mentioned earlier that 4 out of 10 U.S. kids are growing up in father-absent homes. Well, why is that important? Intellectually and societally, it's important because kids from father-absent homes have a higher incidence of drug and alcohol abuse, crime and incarceration, teen suicide and pregnancy. All the things that we read around in the headlines there in Canada, in the United States, around the world, have a lot to do with the breakdown of the family. Well, what are we really talking about? We're talking about, for the most part, is dads not being present physically, emotionally, and spiritually in their kids' lives. And the moms are doing everything they can. Healthcare, education, in many cases they have to be the breadwinner as well. I mean, it's overwhelming. So anyway, I started talking about my relationship with my dad and why it was difficult. And what I found was that people felt more comfortable talking about difficult things going on in their lives, right?
Right.
And that includes having a child with special needs. A lot of guys are not wearing that on their sleeve, right? If they have multiple children, they're usually talking about their typical children and all the achievements their typical children have. And what we need to do is level the playing field so they're talking about all their kids and all their achievements, right?
Okay.
We love each of our kids, and we just need to be more open and authentic. So that was one of the main takeaways from doing the Dad's Honor Ride, the TEDx talk. That was your question, was one that I started talking about that publicly. Anybody that knew me, was close to my family, knew about my situation. I just didn't feel comfortable talking about it, broadcasting it, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm very open about it. Somebody has questions about my dad. You know, I still want to be respectful. He passed away 7 years ago. It'll be 7 years in May. And, you know, it is what it is, right? Hopefully people can learn from that and have a better experience with their own dads or be a better dad themselves so they can avoid some of the pitfalls.
Mm-hmm.
But go along with having a dysfunctional relationship.
I agree. And I'm so thankful. I have a great relationship with my family, with my parents, my niece and nephew. They know I'm on autism spectrum, so they're very loving. They're very supportive of me. They're always there. It's important to have a good relationship with your family.
Do you have siblings, Chris?
Yeah, one brother. He's older by 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
So he's
like big brother. Did he always like beat up on you like most big brothers do to their little brothers?
Not really. Not really. But he used to, when I used to get frustrated, I was banging. I heard bang, bang, bang against the ceiling because I was upstairs originally. I was in the upper room and he was in the lower room. Now I'm in his old room actually now. But there's actually a little marking on the ceiling where we covered it up because he put a hole through it because he was banging it so hard. But no,
oh, that's a good story.
I have a good relationship with them and my sister-in-law too. Like they've been very supportive. They've been very helpful and they've helped me around with the studio stuff too. Like they gave me an idea for Christmas birthday. Like maybe we should get you a green screen to go behind the chair, but never happened. I might put it on my list again this year for a green screen. I like that. Instead of having to see the Lysol bottle that's sitting there, that's kind of been bothering me the whole time we've been talking. But no, it's important. It's really important. I'm glad. I know I don't get along with one of my aunts that well, but you know, it is what it is. She's going through some health stuff herself. Like, she might have dementia, and I have to be more understanding about that too, because my late aunt that passed away, when was it? It was 8 years ago. 8 years ago, oh, 2015, yeah, 9 years ago, my one aunt passed away from dementia, and in 2008, my other aunt died from dementia as well, so it's, you know, but in retrospective, I love my family. I'm a big family man. That's what matters in the end, is I am a big family man, and, you know, no matter, all families will have their quarrels, all their fights, you know, it's all part of it'll happen, right?
Yeah, well, I got a lot of words of wisdom from my maternal grandfather. Mm-hmm. And one of them was the importance of discipline. And in his case, you know, making sure that you save, right? 10% of everything you earned. And one of the messages that I took away was from him, he said, you know, we all have challenges in life, but if you are disciplined with your finances, your problems will be less of a financial nature. And that's just something I really took to heart. And, you know, life's unpredictable, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't pick who your family members are. And, you know, you just have to sort of accept the reality of whatever hand you've been dealt and do the best job you can, right? And, you know, if you don't have the answers, hopefully you can seek out the answers. If you need to, find those that can be of support to you, right? And we were talking earlier about mentors, right? The importance of mentors, the importance of identifying people who've been there and done that. And it's not a silver bullet, but there's a value in tapping into being part of small groups of people. And it reminds me, I didn't mention this earlier, but the most consequential or comprehensive thing that the Special Fathers Network does is that we host mastermind groups. And we have piloted them over the last 3 years. We've had a Tuesday night and a Wednesday night group. Mm-hmm. These are dads meeting on a weekly basis, different time zones, different geographic areas, different diagnoses of their kids. The kids range in age from as young as 2 years old to like late 30s. So a wide range in ages and socioeconomic groups for that matter. And they're looking, right, to have that weekly communication, daily WhatsApp messaging with one another, right? Because they can be themselves. They can be authentic, right? And they get each other, right? It's a very powerful experience. So that's weekly, usually in the evenings. Most of the meetings are virtual. There is some face-to-face meetings. They each make a financial contribution and investment. So they've got some skin in the game. It's not like, oh, this is a program, a not-for-profit program, and you're the recipient. You are, but you know, you're actually, you know, investing your time and a small financial commitment on a monthly basis. And then we put on an annual retreat. We've done three of these in the past, different locations in the Midwest. So it makes it as easy as possible for the dads to get together. And it's always a highlight of the year, the weekend retreat. So anyway, that's the Special Fathers Network mastermind group experience.
All right, cool. That's really cool. I want to talk about one last thing here on my notes for this podcast. Can you talk about your book, 21st Century Dads, A Father Journey to Breaking the Cycle of Father's Absence?
Sure. So that came out in 2016. It was the first of the six books that I've written. And the book has three components to it. By the way, there's 21 chapters. It's the 21st Century Dads Foundation. There were 21 days to the first dad's honor ride. So there's that theme, 21, that goes over and over and over. So it wasn't a travelogue, but I did try to share some of the highlights of that bicycle ride that I was making reference to earlier. The book was more about the advocacy, the important role that men play in their children's lives. And then, like I had mentioned earlier, I started talking a little bit about the dysfunctional relationship I had with my dad. How did that occur? What was some of the impact of that? And I'll share one anecdotal story, and you can edit this out if you want, because I had never really talked about this publicly until I wrote that book. My wife, I think, was really one of the only ones that like knew the story. So when I went off to college, my parents had been divorced for about a decade. And the way that my college was paid for is when my mom paid her half in cash. And my dad said, oh, it would be more economical to take out student loans. So we took out student loans. I knew that I was responsible for these student loans. But the agreement that we had was, as long as I maintained a B average, that he would pay for the loans. He would pay off the loans when I graduated. So fast forward, senior in college, I was an accounting major, which is one of the more challenging disciplines at one of the top accounting schools, University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana. I already accepted a job with Price Waterhouse, one of the big eight public accounting firms. So primo job. And I don't know if I had taken the CPA by that time or I was scheduled to sit for the CPA. And I graduated and I got this letter 6 months later, you know, from the Student Loan Association saying that, you know, here's the terms of your loan. And, you know, if you pay off the entire amount, here's the payoff amount. If not, here's what your monthly payments are going to be. And I took it to my dad and I said, well, you know, you remember what our agreement was, that if I got a B average and I graduated on time, et cetera, that you were going to take over, you know, the payment for these student loans. And he said, well, what was your GPA? We were on a 5-point system then. And I said, sort of proudly, my GPA was 3.9, right?
Right.
And you know that in addition to not only doing well academically, I was president of my fraternity. I led a philanthropy project, which was like one of the top projects at the University of Illinois. I had served on national boards and I, you know, was just very active beyond just my academic experience. Mm-hmm. Said, oh, so you didn't have a 4-point on a 5-point scale. I said, no, it's 3.9. It's like just a smudge, you know, less than 4-point. He said, well, you know what our agreement was if you didn't have a B average. I said, well, it is a B, but he said it's less than 4.0, right? I said, you're joking, right? And he said, no, I'm not joking, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this was not a written agreement, Chris. This was just a verbal understanding over the course of 4 years. And I was like, F this, right? Mm-hmm. I'll take over loan payments. $87.29, 120 months in a row. Did not talk to my dad for almost a decade.
Wow.
Right. Again, out of this looking back on it, mm-hmm. but it just ripped me apart. Right. So my wife's like, well, what are you going to do after the last student loan payment? So I'm going to get together with my dad, right? Take him out to lunch or dinner, just go over there to his house. And, you know, I did. And I said, you know, I just want to let you know that I finished paying off the student loan, the one that you had agreed to pay for. He goes, I don't remember what you're talking about, with a straight face. And what I realized, Chris, this is the big takeaway for me. Mm-hmm. I thought about it every month that I sat down and paid that student loan payment, the $87.29, right? And it just burned me, right, for 10 years, right? It reminded me, you know, it wasn't a lot of money, you know, certainly as I started to make a living and everything, it was more the principle of the matter. And here, I thought about it every month for 10 years. My dad didn't think about it, I'm going to guess, for most of those 10 years. And he couldn't even remember when I brought it up. So the lesson was, you know, if you don't forgive somebody for whatever the transgression is, mm-hmm. it's like you taking the poison and expecting the other person to die, right? It's right. A cliche, but that was a really, really important lesson for me to learn. And like I said, I reconciled with my dad. We did not have a loving relationship, but the book is full of little anecdotal stories like that. So if you're somebody out there who experienced a dysfunctional relationship with your dad, if you're a dad who is struggling with a relationship with his son or daughter, maybe you can learn from some of the experiences that I've had and not repeat some of the same mistakes. So what it boils down to is that if another takeaway that I had for the dads that are listening, if there's a disagreement that I have with one of my kids and it has something to do with money, like I was just talking about, mm-hmm. and it wasn't like written, right? It was like, what did you hear? This is what I heard type of situation.
Yeah.
I would err 100% in favor of one of my kids. I don't even want to come close to the line, let alone step on the line or step over the line. If there was a misunderstanding, let me take the high road, right? As the adult and say, you know, my word is my bond. It doesn't have to be in writing, right? If I say something, and this is just something in every aspect of my life, you can count on it. You can take it to the bank. So anyway, being honest and being transparent, super important. It's a very valuable lesson that I learned, not in a positive way, but we can all learn from role models in our lives. And the way I think about it is that you can live vicariously through the people that maybe that weren't the best role models and try to emulate the ones that are.
All right. I wanted to, that's probably, okay, now I'm lost for words. You got me speechless now. So how long did it take you? How long did it take you to write this book? And what was like the writing process for that?
Well, I think I had mentioned earlier that I'm a financial guy. So my brain is not like a literary brain, but it's a number sticky brain. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a lot of confidence about writing a book. What I learned, it was like in school, college, and then in my MBA program at Northwestern, was that for business purposes, you wanted to keep all of your writing to less than one page. Mm-hmm. And there's like a business school philosophy that if it takes you more than a page to describe what you're doing, you don't understand what it is that you're asking for, whatever you're talking about. So the message was, be as concise as you can. That doesn't really lend itself to writing a book. But I knew that I wanted to share these experiences. There was a Catholic priest I was quite close to. I'm still close to, Father Bruno Birchmans. And I was talking about all these stories when I came back from that dad's honor ride. He goes, you know, instead of telling these stories and repeating the stories over and over and over, why don't you just write a book? And a couple other people said, yeah, you should write a book. So that was what motivated me to write the book. And I reached out to somebody, a friend of a friend, who had written a lot of books himself. He was a producer, radio and television producer for that matter. John St. Augustine is his name. And we co-wrote the book, right? If you looked at the cover of the book, it says by David Hirsch with John St. Augustine. Mm-hmm. So I want to be totally transparent. I wrote all 21 chapters and I would give my, you know, files to John, and then he actually did more than just edit, but he would take my words and then try to put them in a format that was a little bit easier for people to read or understand. So while I get credit for the book, you know, if you were on Amazon, it has both of our names on it. So it took about 6 months, maybe longer, to go from start to finish. We were prepared to self-publish, and I was very fortunate to find a publisher. And it was a great experience. I'm glad that I did it. And the other books that I've written, if I could say written, are really audiobooks, and they're compilations of the podcasts. So they're all authentic and part of something that I created. But really, each of the audiobooks has a preface, an intro by one of the dads who's profiled in the audiobook, and then there's something that I've written on the back end. But the 12 chapters, which is the format for the audiobooks, it's one chapter per episode from the Special Fathers Network Dad to Dad podcast. And again, topics range from autism, Down syndrome, rare disease, cerebral palsy, and then the most recent book was I'm Losing a Child. So, you know, I hope to continue to produce these audiobooks, and I don't know, I might write a more typical book. I don't know what the subject matter would be, but I've got a number of ideas that have been kicking around. But it does take time. You have to be very disciplined. And I enjoy reading books. So to give up my reading to start writing, you know, I'd have to be pretty clearly motivated to do that.
All right. Is there any social medias of yours that you like to promote?
Yeah, well, I think that as it relates to the 21st Century Dads Foundation and the Special Fathers Network, there's a closed Facebook group. If you're a dad who has a child with special needs, I welcome you to join the Special Fathers Network Dad to Dad closed Facebook group. You can find that on Facebook. And I'm not a big social media guy. I'm 63 years old. I didn't grow up with the social media like a younger guy like yourself, Chris. Mm-hmm. And I do have a greater presence on LinkedIn and the other social medias. And there is an Instagram account. There's a Twitter account for the 21st Century Dads Foundation. But, you know, they're not actively monitored, or there's not like something going on a daily basis, if that answers your question.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to add that we did not talk about today?
Well, I'm sort of fascinated by the work that you're doing and the initiative that you've taken, right? Despite some of the challenges that you've had to overcome. And I guess the question that I have for you is, what is it that's motivated you to become a podcast host and do what you've been doing to shine a bright light on all the good work that you've been focused on?
That's a lot of things. My story goes a long way back. I'll make a short story of it. I started podcasting in 2014. I think it was more the sense I was on the I was on my local my college radio station, and I had a niche back then for radio, like music radio, talking, and, you know, doing topics in between the music breaks and all that at my local college. That kind of like opened the doors for me doing radio. And I did online radio for a while too as well. Like I did some online radio stuff as well. But I didn't really get started until 2014. I had my own music and talk radio or podcast program 2014. But mostly I think it was college. College is a big inspiration. The fans have really inspired me to keep going with this thing. This podcast is what's supposed to be done by now, because it was only a pandemic thing. So it's because of the fans, the reason why I'm still doing this podcast. And also, I guess my team too, like Kelsey, Brooke, and Larry, especially for the other podcast, for the CBLW show, you know, they keep me at bay. They keep me motivated every day. They keep me going each and every day. So it does make a difference with them inspiring me. But mostly, yeah, radio, fans, my team, my family, my niece and nephew. They're part of my little Discord group. So, you know, they really... really inspire me.
Yeah, well, you do a nice job. I want to just say thank you again for the opportunity to talk about the Special Fathers Network, the 21st Century Dads Foundation, and some of the content of the resources that we've created. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I want to thank you for coming on, and you know, I wish you all the best. And you know, I guess now that you've sent me the letter, so I guess it'll be a regular when the new letter comes out. I'll get one. I'd love to keep up on what you guys are doing and all that, and keep up the good work.
Yeah, well, I think what you're referring to is the e-newsletter that goes out on a weekly basis, Fridays, in conjunction with each new episode of the Special Fathers Network Dad to Dad podcast. So if any of your listeners are curious to know more about that, perhaps you could include some information in the show notes.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And one last thing, I have to do another shout out to Rena on Twitter. She is the one that got me connected with you, obviously, so big shout out to her. I'm sure, I know she listens to the podcast, so big shout out to her again for all the connections I made this month. Big thank you to that, to her for that. I butchered my shout out, sorry, but much appreciated to Rena for connecting. And you know, this has been a great month, and getting back into the podcast next week, I'll let you guys know ahead of time, there will be no regular premiere next weekend, because on this Tuesday I will be live here on YouTube with Bob Lament, and we will be talking about I'm kind of tongue-tied. Talking about streaming services, the state of streaming services, so I look forward to that. As always, if you're new to the podcast, please do subscribe or follow wherever you're listening or watching this podcast. You can follow Crispy on the Web Media on Facebook, Twitter, AKX, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, at Crispy on the Web. I will see you guys on Tuesday for another episode of Entertainment Podcast. Bye for now.
Thanks again, Chris.
No problem.
Entertainment Man Podcast is a weekly radio show produced by Crispy on the Web Media. All rights reserved. Any illegal reproduction of this content will result in immediate legal action.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week again for a fresh round.
It's the Entertainment Man Podcast.